Welcome to the Ask the Experts podcast. Here's Karan Bhatia.
I am Karan Bhatia, joined by Jordan Hanthen, 7-0, six wins by way of knockout. Jordan, we know that you have a big test coming up, and we're going to talk to you about that. But I know you also spent some time sparring with Tim Zhu, who we saw, of course, on the main event of PBC on Prime versus Sebastian Vandora. So we'll get into all of that. But first of all, Jordan, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Living life, doing great, feeling great. I'm ready for this Thursday.
So you have a big test coming up. And like I said, we'll get into your fight. But before we do, I wanted to ask, you sparred with Tim Zhu. And of course, we all saw the main event, Tim Zhu versus Sebastian Vandora, PBC on Prime. It was a big moment. And of course, the gash that opened up on Tim Zhu's head. And he ended up taking his first loss against Vandora. And before we even get into that fight, tell me about what sparring with Tim Zhu was like. How did it come together, and how did it feel for you to spar with him?
Sparring was great. My manager set it up. I went there before, you know, when he was still fighting Keith Thurman. We sparred on a Tuesday and we sparred on a Thursday, and that was it. They didn't want to spar Saturday. I didn't come back the following week, but it was a great work, great sparring. They're great people. It was very intense work. A lot of action in that sparring. I was happy with the way I performed and happy how it all went. So it was great.
And were you brought in so that you could get your work in to prepare for your next fight, or were you also helping Tim prepare for Keith Thurman? And in a way, were you kind of modeling Keith Thurman a little bit for Tim Zhu to prepare for that challenge?
No, I wasn't modeling Keith Thurman. I went and did myself, but I was there to help him for Keith Thurman because they didn't know how Keith Thurman was going to come out. He's unorthodox. He can come out press or box. They didn't know, so they were bringing in different styles. So I went in and did Jordan Panthen and sparred the way I spar, or the way I wanted to spar. So they didn't tell me at all to represent Keith Thurman or whatnot.
Got it. And I'm sure either way, it was good work for both you and for Tim Zhu, two undefeated fighters sparring and training together. I'm sure that made both of you better. What did you think of just being in there with a fighter at the level of Tim Zhu? How did it feel for you in there? Did you feel like it was a good competitive sparring session?
It was very competitive on Tuesday, and I thought I did even better on Thursday. I feel like I'm right there with that level already. So, and I'm still improving. So I feel like I'm right there at the level already. And I feel like a year, 2 years, a year and a half from now, I'm going to be even better than I was now past that level. So, I mean, I feel like I'm already there at this moment. And people who've seen that sparm would probably agree.
You're certainly on your way. Undefeated 7-0, six of those by knockouts. Like we said, your next test is on Thursday on Triller TV, Fight TV. And like I said, we'll talk about your fight. Just closing it off with Tim Zhu, when you heard that Keith Thurman was falling off as the opponent and Sebastian Vandora was coming in, obviously you had spent time with Tim Zhu. What were your thoughts when you heard that Sebastian Vandora was going to come in there?
I mean, that's a big switch, you know, way different fighter, big switch. But I thought Keith Thurman would win the fight, and I think we all saw that through two rounds of how the fight was going, and then that cut happened, and there's a lot of issues. I mean, one, we all seen fights stop for less for legal blows. That was an illegal blow. I think, in a way, he was cheating. Now, Tim Zhu might say, don't stop the fight. This is how I would say it, or any other prideful fighter. But I think in the big scheme of things, that fight probably it should have been stopped. One, you know, it's cutting the main vein on top of the head. There's rumors about them not using the correct stuff, but would it even matter? Because it wouldn't stop bleeding because it's that main vein on top of the head. The fight should have been stopped. The dude couldn't see it for 10 rounds. And you see how the fight trajectory changed right after that cut, and you see the way it was going. So I think a rematch is kind of mandatory. I think they think Tim deserves a rematch. I think they should do a rematch. That's my opinion on that fight. I mean, it's a tough switch, but I think, he adapted. And he brought in, you know, tall southpaw sparring partners for the last couple days of sparring. And I think he would have won that fight without that cut. I think we all seen how that fight was going. I mean, that was just a crazy gash. And I think you know, nine times out of 10, any of the card, that fight would have been stopped. And I mean, I was watching the fight. I'm like, I was at Zerto Ramirez's fight, watching that fight on my phone. I'm like, how is this fight? I mean, then I kept going. And I'm like, wow, this fight's not being stopped. So, yeah.
Was there anything in sparring or training that you noticed for Tim Zhu in terms of any kind of cuts or things like that? Or do you feel like the cut, you know, he was 100% going into the fight and the cut just happened because of the elbow from Sebastian Fundora? It was inadvertent. It's most likely because of the height difference. And when Fundora puts his elbow out, it's almost at the level of Tim Zhu's head, which is where the cut happened. But did you notice anything going into to the fight, or do you feel like the cut just happened on fight night because of the elbow?
No, the cut just happened on fight night. He's 100% going in. This is a freak accident. It's like an accidental headbutt. You know, I guess with Fondori, he's so tall, as the accidental jump into your elbow. And yeah, it's accidental, but still in a legal blow and an accidental whatnot. And yeah, and then that thing was bleeding like no tomorrow. I mean, how much blood did he lose while actively fighting someone or a high intense training session in a way? How much blood did it come out of him? So, on a medical standpoint, too, I'm surprised that it was never stopped.
It was certainly a very brave performance by Tim Zhu to continue with that cut, losing blood, like you said. It seemed like when the cut first happened, Tim Zhu, you know, really stepped on the gas and was landing the right hand at will, even though it was a higher target, you know, Fedora's head being higher up, but he was able to land. It seemed like there was an urgency there. But then credit to Fundora, who was able to kind of come back in the later rounds and rally his attack. And obviously, Tim Zhu fatigued overall, you know, from the cut and everything else. And also credit to Fundora for seizing the moment. You spoke about it a little bit before. I know you said you were at a different fight and you were watching on your phone, but overall, what did you think of each man's performance? It was a very gutsy performance by both men in there.
I mean, yeah, it was gutsy. It's hard to say how Tim would have fought differently, you know, it without that cut, because we've seen him doing great the first two rounds. I mean, I just wouldn't have fought Fundora the way he fought him the rest of the fight. But like I said, I wouldn't know if that's the way he would have fought him without that cut. He did a lot of lean back defense, meaning he's dodging Fundora's punch while leaning back. I mean, no, I don't think that's the right thing to do, leaning back on a 6'6" guy. That's his Tim style. He likes medium range. He likes his range. It's like the fight in the inside. As you see, he pressed forward, but he never fought head to chest on Fundora. This is not Tim's style, but I feel like when you're fighting a 6'6" guy like that, you got to be in the inside on him. I mean, the outside, you know, jab wasn't doing damage, but it kept peppering him, jab, jab, jab. And then the inside, you got to really watch out for that left uppercut of Fundora. Other than that, there's really no other threat in the inside besides those uppercuts. I thought he should have went to the body more and should have been more inside, but he couldn't see. I mean, it's just, you know, by round two, he was having his way with him, landing big shots. It was about to get bad. You know, that's probably where you're thinking. And all of a sudden, that cut happened. I mean, he came out of the corner. As soon as he came out of the corner, that blood streamed down his face. His whole face is bloody within 5 seconds of the next round. Every single round. I mean, they could not stop it or even contain it whatsoever. He's out for a minute or minute and a half of the following round. Every single round, he came out of the corner. It's flowing down his face. Fundora. You know, he threw a lot of punches, you know, a lot of pepper and a lot of pity pat punches, but you know, they score points and whatnot. I'm not too at all. And you know, he gutsy and whatnot. You know, he's just a hard person to fight, 6'6" southpaw at 154. I mean, it's never been seen before, but a lot of pity pat punches. You know, he's definitely beatable. That's just my opinion on Fundora.
It's really good analysis on your end, and you're one of the few people who are very uniquely qualified to analyze this fight because you trained with Tim Zhu and sparred with Tim Zhu, and so you had experiences that others didn't, and I can hear it in your analysis there, especially with Tim Zhu did, you know, with his head moving back. I did notice that in the early rounds. I thought that was interesting because generally, that's something that fighters aren't trained to do, right? You're trained to not move your head back in that way, because you could be open for a counter shot, especially
Yeah.
on a fighter as tall as Sebastian Fundora is. So I think that's really great analysis on your part. I know you weren't watching the fight as closely because you were at another event, like you said, but before the scorecards were read and the fight went to the bell, did you have a sense of who won that fight? Did you think Tim did enough to get the win, or did you think Fundora won the fight because of the cut? What were your thoughts at that time?
I actually just rewatched the fight last night, so I have it fresh in my memory. I'll probably have an edge Fendora. I mean, it was very close, you know, because he's throwing a lot of pity pat punches, but then Tim comes back with more powerful punches as less output. So, I mean, it's kind of like, what do you prefer as a judge? It was very close. You know, it could have been a draw, but I think 115, 113 Vandoor was right. Probably have to lean towards that, you know, close fight. But like I said, it's hard to grade this. As I hate even analyzing the fight because I'm analyzing 10 rounds of a fight, which was crazy circumstance. And before those 10 rounds, the first two rounds was completely different atmosphere. Tim snapping his head back, big shots are landing. I mean, you're going into round three looking like, oh, this, he's got his rhythm. He's got his, this is about to get bad. He's bleeding from the mouth and the nose. It's about to get bad for Vandoor. You can see Tim stopping him. That's how the fight was going. Then all of a sudden it changed. So I have criticism on Tim. I don't want to criticize because I don't even know. The fight could be 100% completely different without that cut. I mean, Vandoor could have been knocked out and we would not be even talking about this at all. So it's just a crazy circumstance. And, you know, shit happens in boxing.
Anything can happen when you step in the ring. And we saw that last Saturday night, Tim Tszyu dealing with that cut. Vandoor was also bleeding from the nose and the mouth. And that was because of the punishment coming his way from gutsy Tim Tszyu, who was fighting through the cut. It was a bloody performance, a brave performance by both fighters, a really interesting fight. Before we move on from this fight and talk about your next event, my last question on this fight, we know that Tim Tszyu was preparing for Keith Thurman and you had come in, for sparring and things like that. Now that you saw Tim Tszyu, you know, even losing a very close fight with the cut, but obviously having success early on against Vandoor, landing some sharp straight right hands and things of that nature, how do you think Tim Tszyu versus Keith Thurman would have played out if that main event had stayed intact?
I think it would have stopped Keith Thurman. Look at Keith Thurman's record. Hurt to the body bad by Marion Barrios. Hurt to the body bad by Manny Pacquiao. To the point takes his mouthpiece out and runs around the ring to get away. Hurt to the body about Collazo years ago. He's been hurt to the body many times. He somehow survived. I think if Tim didn't catch him with his right hand, because Tim's best weapon is his right hand. That's without a doubt, that straight right hand, his right hand in general. If he didn't hit him with that, I mean, I think he would have hurt him to the body, and I don't think he would have got away from Tim Tszyu. That's just my opinion. I think it would have been a Tim Tszyu stoppage, maybe round 8 or 9. That's how I would have seen it gone.
It's we'll never know at this time unless they fight sometime in the future. But it would be interesting to know Keith Thurman's thoughts watching that event, especially the gutsy performance there by both guys. We'll see what happens. That's just what happens in the fight game. So let's switch gears here and talk about your fight coming up. And I can hear it in your voice and your analysis. You're obviously a student of the game. I can hear that, you know, you obviously have a high boxing IQ. I'm sure that you're preparing thoroughly for this fight. You're already 1-0 in 2024. You won your fight earlier this year by first round knockout, 7 wins, 6 of those by knockouts. You've got power. You're only 27 years old. Tell me a little bit about this challenge that you have coming up on April 4th. Tell me about your opponent and how you're preparing for him.
I'm fully prepared for my opponent. I prepare every fight like I'm fighting for the world title. So I'm fully prepared for the throw punches and bunches for 8 rounds and go to war if necessary. But you know, I got a tough opponent in front of me from Uzbekistan. You know, Eastern Europeans are always, you know, tough. They live that life. So I'm expecting a tough fight. I got a game plan. I could see me countering him early, maybe catching him with something, but if not, I could just see me, by round three and so on, applying my presence and slowly breaking him down, but we'll see. I'm literally ready for everything, anything. And, you know, it's hard to find sparring for me, someone in California. So I've been sparring everything. I've been sparring some southpaws this camp. I sparred tall guys, small guys. I mean, I spar all over. So I'm really ready for anything. I'm sharp. I'm in shape. The weight cut's been easy. I mean, I'm going to go out and do my thing. I feel like I'm going to put on another great, amazing, exciting, electrifying performance. You know, eye-opening, ooze-ahs performance. That's what I see. So, I mean, yeah.
And we'll see how it plays out on Thursday night. Your opponent is from Uzbekistan, 19-5 with 14 knockouts, and that is Ravshan Hudanazarov. He's an Orthodox fighter, listed at 5'9", like we said, from Uzbekistan. So he's going to certainly have the experience edge. He's fought as a professional 24 times coming into this fight. You've fought as a professional 7 times. Do you think the experience edge will make a difference at all on Thursday night?
No, I don't think I make a difference. I think on my what on my fourth fight, I fought a guy with 57 fights. Guy beat Victor Ortiz. On my fifth fight, undefeated guy, sixth fight, I fought another guy, Cameron Krell, who had stopped twice. He fought 53 times and fought pretty much everybody. I mean, I've been in guys with experience. I don't think the experience is really going to matter. There'd be no effect with that.
And you mentioned the sparring that you've done for this camp, and I know that you're training out in North Hollywood. You're taking on former world champions, top contenders. You're taking on a bunch of different people. When you prepare for a fight like this, are you finding specific types of sparring and specific types of training tailored towards your opponent, or are you just finding a variety of different styles and just preparing yourself the best you can for Thursday night?
No, like sparring's not the easiest to get. I even had to pay for some sparring. Already at my level, seven fights, I had to pay for my last sparring session, because it's been hard to get high quality sparring or, different look. Obviously you try to get guys who resemble a little bit, obviously the same stance, orthodox and whatnot, but sometimes it's kind of what you get. But I've had good sparring. I've had a great camp. I'm in good shape. Great shape, correct that, great shape. And yeah, I had the sparring necessary, and I'm ready to go.
We can hear it in your voice that you're ready for Thursday night. There's been a lot of fighters and trainers in the game who have been complimentary of you and what you're doing in the boxing ring. One of those is Zerto Ramirez, who won a cruiserweight championship last Saturday. It sounds like you were in attendance for that. He said Jordan is a very talented fighter. He's hungry for success. He has an excellent corner and will become world champion if he continues down that path. There's been other positive notes from Ronnie Shields and many others in the boxing game. What does it mean to you when you hear fighters, trainers, other people who have been accomplished in this sport say positive things about you and everything that you're doing?
It means a lot. It means I'm doing the right thing. I think so. That gives me like a green check mark to myself that, okay, I'm doing the right thing. I'm on the right path to stay this right way. People see it. I work my ass off, work hard. I'm in the gym before other fighters. I leave the gym after they leave. People see it. And that's not one day. That's day in and day out. I'm up early at 4 a.m. doing stuff on weekends. I'm doing the stuff that nobody wants to do than necessary things to become successful. So I'm pushing myself to limit nutritionally, physically, meditation, everything. I'm doing everything, anything positive on my end. I'm not trying to leave no stone unturned. And that goes not just for this training camp. It goes pretty much. So that's how I always been. When I was back in the amateurs trying to win, I was trying to do the most. I was trying to push myself to the limit to be, an animal when I get in that ring. So it just means I'm on the right path, and they see it. They see my sparring sessions. They see the work. They see my feet soaked in sweat, me leaving footprints around the gym. So it's seen day in and day out.
And your success is obviously a testament to your hard work. One thing that you're doing, which I think will resonate with fans, which I'm sure fans want to see more of, is you're staying very active. You fought five times in 2023. I know you have ambitions to fight six times in 2024. This is going to be already your second fight in 2024. So you're staying active. Give me a timeline on an ideal scenario for you. In terms of your career, you're 27 years old. When do you want to, contend for a title? What are your goals in the sport that you hope to achieve? And when do you hope to achieve these goals?
I see me finishing the year at least 12 and 0, 11 knockouts, and then 2025 I could see probably five fights because the fights are tougher. I'm gonna have more rounds, body healthy. Probably 4 to 5 fights in 2025, minimum four, maybe five. It just really depends how the year goes and everything. But I see myself contending for and winning a world title by the end of 2025. I could see myself in that trajectory and whatnot. At 15, 16 fights, I'm gonna be right there. So I feel like I'm gonna be in, and people talked about me while I'm at 12, 13, but I'm gonna be right there with them, and the fights are gonna be starting to become very important, very game-changing fights. So that's where I see it going.
Certainly. And I think if you continue down the path you're on, which is obviously hard work, staying active, surrounding yourself with other fighters who have had success in this game, like Tim Zhu and the others, other fighters that we talked about, Zerto Ramirez and others, learning from them. And you mentioned also, I think a huge thing not to be overlooked is also the mental aspect of boxing. You mentioned meditation and bringing that into your training and preparation. So it sounds like you're doing all of the right things. I don't think it's a stretch to say you're probably not as well known yet in the mainstream of boxing. And I know that you're working your way up. This is going to be now your eighth professional fight. What do you want people to know about you outside of the ring, your story, your background? What do you want people to know about you?
I mean, I'm not like any other fighter. You know, nothing's given in boxing, but some people have easier path. You know, it's just, you know, I'm not like any other fighter. I started 15, stopped at 18. You know, took 5 years off, went down, did rodeo, but then became a cowboy, went into business, was very successful at what I did, you know, didn't have to come out of the box and had a, you know, made money. I was like 21 years old, you know, a couple cars, apartment, was very successful. Didn't like where I was. I looked in the mirror, whatnot, thought I could go back to boxing. I was right. Moved from Virginia all the way back to Hawaii. Back to our original coach to resume. My shit's like a Netflix documentary. It's like a movie. I go back to Hawaii, never won national Golden Gloves. And I quit everything, quit my job, you know, my very successful job. I had, you know, very successful job making six plus figures a year easily at 23 years old with a future and everything. I mean, most people say I had it made. I quit, left all behind with no plan B, went to Hawaii. Said, I need to win nationals. Need to win nationals. Need to win national championships. I had 20 amateur fights going into national champs. I haven't fought in 5 or 6 years amateurly. And I put it all on the line. If I didn't win nationals, maybe I would have gave up on it or whatnot. I put it on the line, went to national tournaments, and I dominated the U.S. national championships in April of 2021. I dominated, stopped 2 out of the 5 guys, and just put on a performance averaging 120 or something punches around throughout the tournament. Went on that to convert the double that year to win national Golden Gloves. Never won that. Been to what was that national Golden Gloves once. Lost to LaShawn Rodriguez back in 2014. This one I was 17 years old. Came back and I converted the double. Made Team USA. Went to the Worlds. Had another setback. Had a head clash within 20 seconds of the first round. My first fight at the Worlds in Serbia. And they stopped the fight. Way less, not as bad as the cousin Tim Zhu. There you go. So they stopped the fight for that, you know. And then I came, turned pro, moved from Hawaii to California, turned pro, had my pro debut in August after a motorcycle accident derailed my original pro debut. Had my pro debut maybe not the best coach, you know, with bad management or bad advisors. Didn't have my second fight until April of 2023. 9 months of wasted time, not because of me. Finally got it turned around, and here we are. So, I mean, I'm just driven. I'm leaving no stone unturned. I want this, and I'm going to. I want it, and I'm going to get it by any means necessary. So, you know, I literally quit everything back in early 2020, before COVID happened. This is in January. You know, I have no plan B. I put everything on the line, meaning if this doesn't work out, I don't know what I'm going to do. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure it works out.
It's a tremendous story, and thank you for sharing that. And I wanted to ask you a couple of things that stood out to me. I know that at one point after your amateur wins and success, I know you're a big John Wayne fan, and you walked away from boxing to become a cowboy, as you mentioned, working on ranches, bull riding, things like that. So when you're a cowboy, you certainly probably don't have to get hit in the head. I know there's other dangers there. Why did you decide to leave the cowboy life and come back to boxing?
Well, it's funny. I had accident. Let's say a horse accident. It's a long story, so I'm not going to go into it. But I had a horse accident on Thanksgiving of 2025. I have a nice scar on my forehead. Sometimes hard to see because I heal well. But if I go out of a hot shower in the sun, you'll see it. But I had a giant, stitches down the middle of my face by like 40-something stitches from a horse accident. I didn't get paid at all for a cow. This is all experience. I mean, I learned so much, have so many stories. I can go on story after story of wild stuff and just in the mountains and everything I did. But I'm, you know, it's like I get paid a certain amount. For example, one time I worked 7 days in a row you know, I'm averaging 15, 16-hour days. I think my paycheck was $170 at the end of the 7 days in a row, you know? So it wasn't for the money, it's for the experience. I think after that, after other close calls, I was like, you know what? I think I'm good here. I'm gonna go back to Netherlands. I went into business after that. And you know, life took its course, but you know, I've been riding horses since 4 years old. I love horses. I love United States of America. You know, I love cowboys, and I see myself, you know, very soon, back on the ranch, with my own horses, you know, when I don't have to worry about my health and keeping it myself healthy, for a box. I'm a drilling guy. I like snowboarding, like other stuff. I put a lot of stuff on hold, so I keep my, self, healthy for this sport and to hurt myself. It's like a motorcycle accident. You know, I'm prone to do something dumb and hurt myself. So I try to keep myself out of the situations now.
I know that you've had a lot of different things that you've done in your life. One thing I read, and I'm curious to hear more. I know that you attempted to become a Navy SEAL in part because your father was a career naval officer. How close did you become to becoming a Navy SEAL?
You know, I would have become a Navy SEAL, and it was fated that I didn't, for a couple of reasons. So people don't know the whole process, and I didn't know the whole process. Let's see. I came back. This is when I came back from the being a cowboy. It's early 2016. I think I had my ASVAB. I studied for it. I tutor. I had my ASVAB in March 2016. I passed it first try. And you got to hit a certain score to be even qualified to attempt to join the special warfare operations on the Navy side. So I hit it the first time. Boom. Before you get to be accepted by the Navy, you have to train with a SEAL mentor, pass their PST and all this stuff. Before I even get to go train with the SEAL mentor, I have to be passed medically by MEPS. You know, and it's a whole debacle system they had at Fort Meade in Maryland. You know, I had ADHD at medicine when I was 11 years old. I think I stopped taking 11 years, but that is a big issue. I had other injuries, the scar on my face. They want records. It takes me weeks to get records from, like, I moved all around from childhood doctors. I get them the records. Oh, this doctor retired. We don't want this record. Long story short, I think I started with the medical procedure, like getting cleared by MEPS in April of 2016. I wasn't cleared by MEPS until over a year later, maybe like May or June of 2017. Yeah. So during that time, I got a job in sales. I went got a job in sales and whatnot, and became very successful running gyms. And I went from here to here to here in the company. You know, I was making more money than I would have made in the military. I had a girlfriend now. I had a dog. No, I didn't go to college. So I was loving life and what I was doing. You know, I had money. I was just having fun. I mean, I didn't want to join the military anymore. I think I'm like, you wasted a year of my time. I'm like, nah, I'm kind of good. I don't want to do it. I'm happy I didn't do it because, you know, the whole them requiring everybody to take the COVID shot, everything. It just, you know, and me going to war, I was like, it's probably good. You know, I might not be here today if I did that. So everything happens for a reason. And I was just fated not to be in the military, but you know, I love the military, and that was a dream of mine at a time. It just didn't work out. And I think it didn't work out because of me being here today and pursuing this.
A lot of different things had to happen for you to be on this path. And now you're on the path to boxing, undefeated, 7-0, 6 knockouts. Your next test is on Thursday night. Two more quick questions before I let you go. One thing we were talking about, a big positive towards your development and career is you're surrounding yourself with top fighters, top opposition, people who have had success. And I saw that you actually sparred against Jonabek Alimhanala. I had the pleasure of calling Jonabek Alimhanala's last fight on ESPN Plus and Sky Sports. Tremendous fighter, now a unified champion at middleweight. But he's a very scary fighter. He's someone that is definitely avoided in this sport, and he has a lot of power. He can do a lot of things in the ring. There's probably not a line around the block in terms of fighters willing to even spar him. You were willing to do that to get that experience. What was it like sparring with Jonabek Alimhanala? And I know that you're recently campaigning at 154 and 160 pounds. He's the champion at 160 pounds. Is that in addition to what's it like to work with him, would that be a future matchup that you would ever entertain?
Well, yeah, down the line. I mean, I don't see myself really contending for real 160 for a couple years out, because I want to contend at 54. I want to contend at 54. I want to win a world title at 54. Until that's done and completed, then we'll talk about really contending for real at 160. But Jonabek, I sparred with him for about three of his camps for three different fights. I mean, I love sparring with him. I can't wait for him to come back for his next fight, which whatever that is, I don't know, for his next camp to spar with him. I'm sure they're going to want me back. And He's at Brick House training, so I'm sure they're going to want me there sparring. So I can't wait for that. It's great stuff. I mean, I don't shy away from sparring, and sparring with someone like him, it's just so high level. And I mean, he might be the best middleweight in the world, I think. I mean, he needs the right opponent in front of him. I mean, he's very good. He's explosive, hits hard, but I mean, he's just sharp. He's super accurate. He's a tough fight for anyone. He's a super tough fight for anyone. I think he could contend at 68 too. I mean, I'll go as far as to say I think he has a great style to beat Canelo, honestly, and going down 68. So I think he can contend at 68 because this his skill level. He has some height too. I think about 5'11 or 6 feet tall. So he's not too small. So I can see him contending there as well. But he just needs the better opponents in front of him, because I think it'll just give him more to shine and show his ability, because he's very, very good.
He's certainly a tremendous fighter, now a unified champion. So final question for you. We talked about your journey to get to this point, and like we said, your next test Thursday, April 4th, it's going down on Triller TV starting at 10 p.m. Eastern. You have a tough opponent in front of you with a lot of experience. This is another opportunity for you to showcase yourself, win over fans, have an impressive performance. So give me your official prediction for this fight, and anyone, you know, that's listening right now who's interested in your journey, tell them, you know, where they can watch the fight, why they should watch this fight, and why this is going to be an excellent fight on Thursday night.
Well, you can watch the fight on Fight TV on Triller. It's there for pay-per-view for $14.99. So you can watch that fight. What I see going, prediction, I hate predicting my own fights, but I see me stopping him maybe round 4 or 5, but I say that now and then watch me do something in the first round, knock him out. Who the hell knows? So, but nonetheless, I see action packed. You should tune in, because I'm not like any other fighter. You know, I represent USA on my shorts, on my chest. Every time I fight, I'm bringing back American boxing in a different way that nobody else does or has. And I'm just next level. I'm action packed. I have the skills, but I also have the fireworks action. Lots of punches coming. They're coming fast. They're coming hard. And there's a lot of them coming. So it's just, you want to see future of boxing. You want to see future American boxing. You want to see excitement. Tune in, because that's where you're going to see.
Jordan Panthen, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for sharing your journey. Best of luck to you on Thursday night. It's going down on Triller TV, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. You can watch it. Fight TV, Triller TV. Jordan Panthen, thank you so much. Best of luck, and I hope to continue the conversation as you continue your career and start to hit some of these goals that we talked about. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
And that brings us to the end. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you to my guests. If you want to follow us, you can follow at @ATE_podcast. That's on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to follow my personal channels, it's at @CurranBhatia on Instagram and Twitter. That's at @CurranBhatia on Instagram and Twitter. Please subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/CurranBhatia. Please check out our show on iTunes. Hit subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. If you want to email the show, it's asktheexpertspod@gmail.com. I am Curran Bhatia, and this was Ask the Experts.
Thank you for listening to Ask the Experts with Curran Bhatia.